Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Happy opening day. The Sweet 16 tipping off later on this evening. Plus NFL Pro Days galore. We've got a jam-packed hour ahead here on the Lombardi Line. If you missed any of our one, remember you can always download the show in its entirety in podcast form wherever you get your podcasts. Also, by the way, new edition of the GM Shuffle Pod available for all subscribers right now. Grades for the 2024 class. You're talking new kickoff rules, the Dynasty Doc. I have a feeling that you and Femi got pretty heated today about that Dynasty Doc combo, if it is anything like what we talked about yesterday.
Well, I mean, it's so overt, that it's so over the top slanted, that even the people that don't want to side with Coach Belichick can't deny it, right? And so there's really no debate about it. It's not a documentary. It's an infomercial. And it was intended to get Robert Kraft into the Hall of Fame, which, as I've said many times, Stormy, many times, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame for selecting a coach that nobody thought could win, and he won 6 Super Bowls and went to 8 with them. That alone gets you in the Hall of Fame. You don't need documentaries to get you in the Hall of Fame. Now, you want to take credit for the winning? Okay, you can't have it both ways. You can't call yourself a fan and then take credit for the winning. So it's a little bit, you know, there's really no debate about it. It's pretty clear, and I haven't watched 1 minute of it, nor will I watch a minute of it. But the reality of it is it's so, having been in the building, it's so not what happens in the building that it becomes an infomercial.
Yeah, I did love all of the players and Julian Edelman and Slater and all these guys coming forward saying, okay, there's a lot more to Bill than what's being shown in this thing. There are two sides to him. And so I know you guys will get into that. Make sure, again, you check out the GM Shuffle wherever you get your podcasts. We'll talk plenty of NFL throughout the course of this hour. Coming up in 30 minutes, VSiN's own Mike Palm, VP of Operations here at Circa Resort and Casino. He'll join us in studio as well, because they had a pretty special ceremonial first pitch for opening day out here that had a couple of Hall of Famers, Greg Maddux and Frank Thomas, on display. So we'll talk through that with Mike, games being bet today, as well as the Sweet 16 and what the splits and handle are for the 4 games ahead today and tomorrow. I obviously, as a San Diego State alum and fan, am in like a comatose state, I feel like, about watching that game later on today against UConn. But there are a few games that I'm excited about, Michael. As far as today goes, which game do you have the most interest in?
Well, you know, today I would say probably when I look over the games, I probably say the Illinois-Iowa State game, because I have in Alabama, because I have them in my Final Four with North Carolina, because I think North Carolina is playing real well. But having Tate Frazier on and him talking about how good Illinois is and how they're the sleeper, I'm excited to see that one. Now, it starts at 10:03, so wish me luck, okay, Stormy? You know, or 10:09, it's the tip-off, so wish me luck to stay awake for that one. How is the game that Arizona is playing in Los Angeles the first game to tip? How is that possible?
I know. Some of the stuff they did is,
I mean, they made those poor kids play at 11 o'clock. Like, remember the last time Arizona was the first team to tip too, you know? And so I don't understand this. We have to get Will Hill. I mean, like, I don't know what he's doing. He's too busy, obviously. We've got to straighten some of this out. But, you know, look, and then I know you're going to cringe, but I'm looking forward. I like watching great teams play. I like watching teams that have competitive stamina, and I like watching coaches who coach hard. And I'm excited to watch Connecticut play, to see how they handle it and how they're chasing a standard, not chasing a team.
Yeah, I agree with you. I love watching this UConn Huskies team play as well. I just wish that they didn't have to play San Diego State. My hope is just that the Aztecs don't get embarrassed in this spot. Like last year in the national championship game when they played UConn, they brought it close within 5 late in the game, still ended up losing by 17. But you felt in that situation that it was UConn's game to win. UConn is winning games at crazy margin. And again, I just hope that San Diego State, it's great for the program that they're making another Sweet 16, that they're winning a couple games in the tournament, kind of holding the flag for the Mountain West Conference. I just don't want them to get embarrassed by the Huskies today. So we'll see how it plays out. Again,
here's what I would say to that, Stormy. Here's what I would say to that. You're in the Sweet 16. There's no embarrassment, right? You've earned your right. You know, you play hard, and it may not go your way. You may lose. You may win. Who knows? But you can't be embarrassed. You're one of the 16 teams that got here.
I don't know. Tell that to Purdue a couple years ago.
Well, look, the Purdue had different aspirations, right? So I think to me, it's just you got to keep things in perspective, clearly.
All right. All right. Somebody who's trying to keep things in perspective, Drake May, as his pro day is going on today in Raleigh, North Carolina. We talked about him earlier in hour one, how he's been of this class where we talk about risers and fallers. He's the perceived faller. What's the biggest challenge in evaluating a guy like him, and why is he getting talked about the way that he is?
Well, because there's so much inconsistency with his play. You know, he holds the ball. He's kind of doesn't move the pocket as well. 22 is better than 23. You expect more of him. You want him to do different things. You want him to see things quicker, read it. You know, there's so much inconsistency in everything that he does. You're saying, like, who am I getting? You know, this is like false face in Batman. You never know who you're dealing with, right? And so you're constantly asking, which one am I going to get? And can I fix the problems? But the first thing you have to do is you got to identify what the real problems are. That's what you have to do. You got to identify what the real problems are and then work backwards. I mean, this is a kid who was the rookie of the conference, not of of the conference. He was the player of the year in the ACC as a redshirt freshman. You just don't do that. That's a good conference. It's a good conference, and they've got good players. So I think you got to get to why the inconsistencies are happening. Because if Bo Nix would have come out, if he would have been able to transfer to Oregon and play 22 more years, or if Michael Penix couldn't transfer to Washington, or if Jaden Daniels couldn't transfer, you know, with this COVID, everybody's playing forever. I'm shocked Spencer Rattler's in the draft. I thought he was going to play another four more years. You know, Dylan Gabriel's still playing at Oregon. Could you imagine that? I mean, Dylan Gabriel might be older than me. And so they're still playing. But my point is, if they didn't have that, what would we be doing? What would we be doing? Like, we would be critiquing them and wondering. Whereas because he hasn't transferred, because he's got good year, bad year, the doubt creeps up. Nobody's doubting Nix or Penix or Daniels, even though they had really bad years before they transferred.
Yeah, go look at Jaden Daniels 2.5 years into his career, right? Like, Drake May hasn't had the time to develop. He hasn't had the experience yet, but he's got all of those unbelievable physical tools that we've talked about. Something I wanted to follow up on earlier, a point you made about Giants owner John Mara talking about not ruling out a quarterback earlier in the draft. If they fall in love with a quarterback and believe it's worth a number six pick or moving up, he said he would certainly support that. You said J.J. McCarthy was a name that came to mind to you. Drake May is one that comes to mind to me, and I'm curious your thoughts on this. A lot of the comps and his body type and his skill set are Josh Allen. Where did Brian Daboll have the most success when he was coaching Josh Allen? Could there be anything there?
Good point. No, there could be a lot there. And I think that when you just asked the question, it made me recalibrate my answer. I think what John Mara did by saying he wouldn't hold them back is he really opened the door. Because why would he say that if he didn't think they were going to do it, you know? And so I think, why would they be doing all this work if they didn't think they were going to do it? They're doing it. I think there's no question they're doing it. They're not going to, they know, I said this on a pod a month ago, that Jones's rehab may not go as fast as they think. But why would you put all this time into it if you were so in lockstep with Daniel Jones? And Mara knows that he is the number one by a long shot, president of the Daniel Jones fan club. And so if they don't take a quarterback, he doesn't want to get blamed for forcing it. So he kind of like he planted the seed to let everybody know. And they're doing the work. They're doing the work. But I think you make a great point. I think if you liked Allen coming out, you could like some of the things Drake May does. Now, he's not as big as Allen in terms of the body, you know, the broad shoulders and all that, but he's still a young kid.
Daboll and the Giants contingent in North Carolina today for Drake May's pro day. Okay, Michael, every day we've been doing what's on Michael's mind. What's been percolating in the brain? What's been occupying space in your head over the last 24 hours?
Well, one thing just happened. It just hit me, but I'll hit that later. Colleen Wolf from NFL Network on their podcast reported that, you know, there was a scene where Robert Saleh, the head coach of the Jets, and Woody Johnson were in a heated discussion. She kind of hedged on it a little bit. And for me, that was on Monday. We find out yesterday that Clowney signed with the Panthers. To me, that conversation was probably, and again, this is all speculation, that Saleh wanted to get the offer up on Clowney. He wanted Clowney. They thought they were getting Clowney to replace Bryce Huff, and they didn't get it. And I think that was the conversation. That would just be speculation on my part. The second part that's on my head is the Miami Marlins are offering a ticket for $52, all you could eat and watch the baseball game. That's too good to be true, Stormy.
That's a dream. All you can eat anything at a baseball game? Heck yeah, sign me up.
$52, it gets you in the park, and then you can go eat as many dogs as you want. I mean, that's a pretty good gig, isn't it? Don't you think?
If only alcohol was included, that would really push it over the edge. But yeah, I'm with you. Heck of a deal.
It really is. I mean, you know, but they're counting on you drinking a couple beers so you slow down the eating. That's what they're counting on. See, everybody looks at it and says, oh, I'm going to eat. And you go, no, wait a minute. They're going to get, you know, you drink two of those big beers with two dogs and how could you eat anymore?
What's your primary ballpark food? Is it a hot dog? Is it a pretzel, popcorn, peanuts?
Oh,
what you got?
Oh, well, I love pretzels. Soft pretzels are the best, but hot dogs. I mean, how do you resist a hot dog? It's hard to resist a hot dog on the corner of 5th and Park Avenue or wherever they sell them in New York. It's like, holy hell. They're too good. You got to go get one.
Salt or no salt on the pretzel? Another important question.
Oh, tons of salt. Got to have a lot of salt.
You're the best. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, no way or no doubt, continuing to cruise through a lot of the big headlines in the National Football League.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Only 2 days left to sign up on a VSiN Pro annual subscription with our latest deal for the first year. Only $199 compared to the usual $240 price. Get in there now and use our promo code Lombardi. That gets you pro access to everything we do for the entire year, which includes our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game, betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access, plus access to our March Madness betting hub with picks for every game and round of the tournament as things advance. Remember, this offer expires Friday. Sign up today. VSiN.com/subscribe, promo code Lombardi, VSiN Pro Access for only $199.
Do you disagree with these takes?
No way.
No way.
Or do you approve?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. No doubt my mind.
No diggity, no doubt.
It's time to ask Michael Lombardi, no way or no doubt.
So every year, Michael, the NFL makes a variety of changes. This year, more radical change than we are accustomed to when it comes to the new NFL hybrid kickoff. Also, the ban on the hip drop tackle. You got a lot of players upset about it, saying you're watering down the league. What even is a tackle? No way or no doubt. The NFL is legislating defense and special teams out of the game. How do you feel?
No doubt. No doubt they are. They're trying to they want it to be a high scoring affair. They don't really want special teams. They don't see the need for special teams. They don't understand special teams. And they would just rather have the offense have all the rules in their favor and go from there. And they don't understand the essence of the true game. And so all these rules are making it, and they do it under the disguise of player safety, when we're not sure that it's actually the case. And football is a three-dimensional game. You need to play good defense. Because look, I've said this many times, the Patriots went 8 years without winning a Super Bowl after they lost to Denver in a divisional game. And they led the league in scoring three times. They never were lower than eighth in the league in scoring during that whole period. And yet they couldn't get over the hump. They lost two Super Bowls because they couldn't score in the key moments of games. So defense matters. And then they win three Super Bowls in 5 years and go to four Super Bowls because they really improved their defensive front and they improved their defense. So I think, to me, you can't take defense out of it and you can't take the kicking game out of it.
It's the offense's world and we're just living in it, it seems like, right now. Speaking of which, the quarterback position, the most important on the football field, and the QB1 in Dallas has some interesting things come up about his contract. Earlier this week, Ian Rappaport reporting there is no indication the Cowboys will complete an extension with Dak Prescott. No way or no doubt, Michael. Prescott will be the Cowboys quarterback to start the 2025 season.
No doubt.
He's not going to hit the free agent market.
No, I don't think he will. I think Jerry will pay him. Look, he's got him. You know, it's funny. We were talking about this on the podcast. We were grading the players in the draft based on the verbiage of the grading system. And, you know, Dak is one of those players who's really good. He doesn't carry the team. He helps the team, right? And so, but he's paid like a guy who carries the team. And God bless him. You know, he's this version of Kirk Cousins without going through free agency. I mean, he leaves no money on the table ever. You know, and this is why they're in this jam. I mean, his cap number's $55 million. And if they leave him, let him go, is his acceleration from redoing his deal. I mean, Dak has made a fortune and hasn't really produced wins in playoff games. He's no different than Kirk Cousins.
Dak Prescott and the Cowboys season win total this year, 10.5. He's on the final year of his deal. Mike McCarthy on the final year of his as well. Speaking of Kirk Cousins, his former wide receiver, Justin Jefferson, looking to get the bag himself. And their head coach, Kevin O'Connell, talked about Jefferson's impact on the QB situation at this week's league meetings in Orlando. He said, "I felt strongly about keeping Jefferson informed. He's been in the loop. He's been aware. He's allowed to articulate things to me via our relationship. And that's been through this whole process. No way or no doubt, Michael, Justin Jefferson deserves to have a say in the Vikings' next quarterback."
No way. I mean, all he should worry about just playing it, and he's going to get paid. Like let the coaches and the personnel guys handle that. He's got enough on his plate being a great player, and he's got to trust the player, the people around him. It's no different than when you're playing in a basketball game and you see the open man, you pass the ball, or the open woman, you pass the ball, and you trust they're going to make the shot. He has to trust that the Vikings will do the right thing.
While there's no argument that Justin Jefferson is an elite wide receiver, he deserves to get paid. There's some wideouts who are getting paid a little more than they probably deserve at this point. And new Eagles, running back Saquon Barkley had something to say about that. Take a listen.
It's easy to say, like, oh, what they're doing to the running backs is not fair. And I don't believe that. There's guys, you know, I'm not taking shots of anybody, but like there's receivers and positions like who have 600, 500 receiving yards or this amount of stats, and like they're getting paid more than running backs. And it's like,
it's bogus. It really is bogus.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But like, even like same thing with tight ends. It's like, you're not just a tight end. You know what I'm saying? It's like, and you got wide receivers that are probably making a more money than you
with less production.
And yeah. And it's not fair.
And I did love, by the way, at the end of this comment coming from the New Heights podcast with Travis and Jason Kelsey. He said, if running backs want to get paid more, like, we got to earn it. We got to go out there and show why we deserve more. Yeah. But no way or no doubt, Michael, elite running backs should be paid more than some of these middle tier wide receivers.
No doubt. And I've been saying it forever. You know, the analytical community has really been the one who hates running backs, you know. And there is some merit to the fact that you can find backs. I don't disagree with that. Like I said about Bijan Robinson, I'm all for, I think the Falcons should have taken Carter over Robinson. However, when you get one who's dynamic at the right price and you're not using a high draft choice to get him and he can impact. Remember, Aaron Jones was a fifth round pick. And he can impact the passing game, then you've got to pay the guy to the fair market. And he's more valuable than a third receiver. I mean, think about this. Last year, the Raiders carried Hunter Renfro on their team at $16 million a year, and they struggled to want to pay Josh Jacobs. How does that make any sense at all?
That's like saying one plus one does not equal two. That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you say, well, Josh Jacobs is going to have a shorter. Really? I mean, Hunter Renfro has no career anymore. So it's like these inside receivers are getting it. And I thought what Barkley said about Kelsey, and he did it really in a great way. Kelsey's not a tight end. He's a wide receiver. He has been selfless in taking money. He could easily take more money and say, look, I want to get paid like Christian Kirk, who got a huge deal. I want to get paid like Calvin Ridley. But he kind of settles in the market to help the team. But he is he impacts the game, or did. I don't know if he continues to, but they deserve to get paid. And just like these running backs who can impact the passing game, they deserve to get paid.
Chris Ballard has heard all the negative comments about the Colts prioritizing re-signing their internal free agents versus going out and getting a big name in free agency. He responded and said, different is not always better. We did spend. We just didn't spend on outside names. At the end of the day, we know who our players are. We thought our free agents were good players. ESPN's Stephen Holder did report that the Colts offered Danielle Hunter more than the Texans did, but Hunter chose Houston. No way or no doubt, though, when it comes to Chris Ballard, he should be criticized for not spending money on big name outside free agents. Thoughts?
No way on that one. I think that just because you didn't sign a big name doesn't mean you didn't improve your team. And I think what Chris did was take the money and put it in players he knows as the ones he didn't. He tried to sign Hunter. Obviously, that, you know, the Texas state free tax market really helped. So I think ultimately you can't control that. But what he needs to do is he needs to fix his team, right? So if you just bring back your team, are you really improved, right? You got to be able to get some other additions. They need secondary help. They passed on Snead because I think they were worried about his overall medical. Was he going to last the length of the contract? And then they were going to have to pay a high pick, which ended up not being true, for a guy that they were going to have to then pay a lot of money to. So for me, I think a lot is to be determined how he handles the next couple weeks.
One of my favorite quotes coming out of Orlando this week from Steelers reporter Mark Cavalli of The Athletic. He said on the Pat McAfee show, Mike Tomlin loves Russell Wilson. Loves him like you're looking at your little baby kid at home. He absolutely loves him. You hear things about potentially could Justin Fields beat him out? That's just not going to happen. He's going to have to fail catastrophically in season for there to be a move. No way or no doubt, Russell Wilson will be the Steelers QB1 no matter what. Tomlin loves him.
I believe there's no doubt he'll be the starter because I think what Mark said is true. And I think by the way that the Steelers got this deal done so quickly, as I said, there had to be some kind of conversation between Tomlin and Wilson that Wilson liked what he heard. And I think he liked what he heard. So for me, I think there's no question.
I think that, like, barring an injury, Russell Wilson has to be the QB1 from day one. Because, like, I just don't think that being a veteran and getting the reps that you get in preseason, there's just not opportunity for him to lose that job in my brain. I don't know. I agree what he said, though. Something would have to go wrong in season for there to be a change.
Yeah, I just think to me, Russell's experience and Arthur's going to want somebody that he can count on. I mean, remember, Arthur's in a little bit of a shell shock world from Ritter's not protecting the ball. He starts to see Fields not protect the ball. He's going to have deja vu all over again, as Yogi said.
There you go. From day one, I'm just curious how long the leash will be for Russell Wilson. But yes, from day one, it certainly feels like his job. We'll be right back. Mike Palm joining us for the final 30 minutes.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back into the Lombardi Line, coming to you live from coast to coast. Michael out in Jersey. Stormy Bonantoni here, Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas, alongside in studio now, VP of Operations here at the property, as well as the Golden Gate and the D, Mike Palm, and awesome opening day spectacle at the Sportsbook today. You're already decked out in your Cubs gear, and we had a couple Hall of Famers down there on the floor.
Frank Thomas, who's selling his new vodka. FT35. He was behind Megabar for an hour, giving out free samples. And of course, we had Greg Maddux throughout the opening pitch again, Michael. I don't know if you could hear my intro. I said I met Derek Stevens 12 years ago. And, you know, we've long dreamed of this day where one of our childhood heroes could come and throw out the first pitch on opening day at what would become Circus Sports. A pitcher whose control was so precise he walked nary a batter. A pitcher who took that art form to a whole nother level. A pitcher, though thwarted in his attempts to vanquish the hated Yankees, just made him more human. Unfortunately, Pedro Martinez was not available today, but Greg Maddux is back.
I thought you were pulling a George Shea there. No. That's awesome. That's very fun. That's
George Shea was awesome on opening night, wasn't he? He was so good. Hello, Michael. How are you?
Hey, how are you? You know, it's funny. I think I read somewhere where Maddux was like one of the, he like rarely ever got to a 3-1 count on any hitter. Have you ever seen that stat? Like, his control was just amazing.
Well, he went.
And it's kind of a lost art.
Yeah, he went so many. What, he had 50-some innings. He didn't walk a batter. I mean, it's and he just did it because he could precisely put the ball wherever he wanted to, right? Wayne Krivsky, who contributes to our network, former Cincinnati Reds GM, was here last year but couldn't make it this year, sent me a thing about there'd be so much less injuries in baseball if all these young kids sat there and watched how Maddux pitched. All this nonsense of max effort every pitch is why you have so many arm injuries. This guy got everybody out throwing, you know, less than 90 miles an hour, although he could reach back and get 93 if he needed to. I mean, it was an art to watch him. And the games went fast because he threw strikes, and he was the best fielding pitcher of a generation, 18-time Gold Glove winner.
It's amazing. It's just really amazing. I mean, go ahead, Stormy.
I was just going to say, I want to give him credit, too, because he came on our show last year because he had done some assisting with the Rangers in pre-training and said, hey, this team could be pretty awesome. And yeah, I know that was prior to a pretty significant injury that they ended up having, but he was telling people to buy in on that team right away.
Yeah, his brother, of course, the pitching coach, and he had gone and worked with him in spring training. And this was one of the two win totals I did bet last year. Now, silly me, I didn't bet any futures on him for World Series or playoffs, right? So it's interesting to talk to these former guys who work with different teams now, these former great pitchers like Oral Hershiser, who works with it. He gives you very blunt opinions on the current pitching staff. Some of which, of course, is off the record, but it's a good cue to betting.
So how, on a day like today where you have the Sweet 16 tipping off and Major League Baseball, how's the like handle distributed? What's the lowdown from the book?
Michael, I'm going to get to this in the pressing three, but I mean, this kills us that the first two games are rained out, right? What they had to play the Mets in New York when they're playing Milwaukee. They couldn't use the Dome Stadium in Milwaukee. They got two Dome teams playing each other, Toronto and Houston. I mean, so now you don't get a first pitch till 3:15 Eastern time on the opening day of baseball. And by the way, 3 hours later, they're tipping the Sweet 16. That hampers it. That hampers it. You know what we've taken a lot of bets on? Shohei futures. People betting under, thinking there's a shot he'll get suspended, so it's going to be free money. Under home runs, under all this, you know, total bases, all this sort of thing. I don't know. Even if something's true, do you suspend the guy that's the face of the game? I mean, unless he bet on Major League Baseball, who knows? But that's been interesting. But nobody touching the Dodger win totals. They're betting Shohei under, but they're okay to bet over 103 wins even if he gets suspended.
What's your sleeper team this year, Mike, besides the Cubbies?
So I think the Padres are interesting. And I know we have a sponsorship as it comes in Padres, right? It's a very homer call. But
well, you watch them more because of it.
I do watch them. And did you see what was just announced? They're going to be on in Las Vegas this year on Cox. They just struck a deal. No, it's huge for us. I mean, two different prices for our sponsorship if they're on here or they're not. So they're going to be on 379, the year view. I think they've quietly, although they lost Snell, have put a roster back together. I know the owner's death hurt them and set them back a little bit. I'm trying to fade the Dodgers. I think the Dodgers are mismatched parts. I think they have too many outfielders. Obviously, they had to move Betts to shortstop, and I know that has to do with Lux throwing the ball. But if you think the Dodgers are winning 103 games, you're assuming you're getting a lot out of Kershaw. You're assuming Walker Buehler's going to be back and healthy. I just don't see it with the way they're currently constructed. So I'm not sure if I want. I think the Braves are still the best team in baseball, and the market's not saying that because of the love for the Dodgers. So I think there's some value there. But do I try to fade the Dodgers with the team in the division? Is it the Diamondbacks? I still like their staff. Young starters getting better. And the Padres might be sneaky. So my main focus is in the National League, and it's trying to beat the Dodgers, fade the Dodgers. Also, I bet Jesus Luzardo for Cy Young's the only bet I've made so far.
To go back real quickly to what you said about Shohei, like, I feel like this is going to take a really long time before we get
this
any,
onion,
yeah, like,
right?
Before we get any real legitimate answers about what this is. So my only question would be, is that a distraction for the team in general, that it's kind of lingering there in the background?
Well, I don't know if it's a distraction. They're going to be the greatest media show on earth wherever they go, right?
Fair.
And you've got Asian fans, Japanese, everywhere they go. I mean, they're going to be a circus traveling around with all the attention. So the story is so convoluted. And he paints himself into a very thin corner saying, I've never bet on any sport, which if it's true, good for him. But that's a very tight corner to paint yourself into. The most damaging story, and we've had three, right? Temple, this kid, the center in the NBA with the
Dante
props.
Dante Porter.
Porter, this is the worst story by far of all. That, you know, You get a guy who just goes out of games and automatically decides the bets because he doesn't play. He comes in and plays 1 minute and then mysteriously leaves for no explanation. Oh, he re-injured, he re-aggravated something, undisclosed reason. I mean, Nick Bogdanovich was on with Mitch and Paul right before me this morning. Longtime bookmaker around town, ran William Hill, and now with Circa said, you know, it's very dangerous hanging props on guys that play less than 10 minutes a game on average, right? There's something. So yeah. That's the most damaging thing, though. Which coming out from the NCAA and now some legislatures, they don't want props on amateur athletes, right? These college athletes, they get harassed if they don't make their points prop, they don't make their yards prop. Derek told me this was coming when we met with the commissioner, Gloria Navarez of the Mountain West, that this was coming. They don't want these player props for college kids because it's too much of a harassment issue for them. And what people scream at them, they get their phone numbers, they get their address, they send them hate mail because they didn't go over the assist. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think of it, Mike? I mean, would you be in favor of that? I know it hurts the overall betting market, but would you be in favor of that?
Well, here's the problem. All it does is shove more money offshore because they're not going to be regulated to not post it, right? So all it does is transfer more to illegal bookies or offshore. It's not going to solve the problem.
Biggest handle game for the Sweet 16 first day today.
So far, Illinois-Iowa State. And Illinois is getting the action inordinately. It's our biggest decision right now. We will need Iowa State. It's a strange, or not strange, but an interesting contrast in styles, right? A team so focused on offense, a team so focused on defense. I don't know if that's a great matchup for Iowa State. They're still going to have to hit shots, whether they're guarded well or not. I know Illinois doesn't turn you over. It'll be interesting. Sort of a real neutral court in Boston, neither to an advantage, just the big disadvantage of having to play UConn if you advance there. That's your team's in for a beating tonight. Sorry, yeah, a bad beating.
Yeah, but don't rub it in, Mike. She's she's already preparing herself for it. Mike, we had Tate Frazier on earlier in the week, and he was really on that Illinois train. And then we had Tom Crean on yesterday, and he's really on the Houston. Are you getting a lot of action on Houston to win the whole thing, other than Mattress Matt?
Houston's a negative result for us. UConn's a negative result for us. Purdue's a negative result, and everything else is a push or positive. So, I mean, UConn's just the best darn team again. They got to the Sweet 16. I give them credit for that. They got a nice matchup with Yale, but they got through a tough first round game, a very good UAB team. And what can you do? But the conference was again a very big disappointment.
Yeah, and it's I'm glad that it's my alma mater that is the team that holds the flag for the league. I think that's great that when you separate stats for the conference, it's like, here are San Diego State's stats in the tournament. Here is the rest of the group. But yeah, I have no confidence in them today. And I know UConn keeps getting bet up and up.
Who would you have confidence in against UConn though?
True. Well,
I don't have confidence with any team.
I asked this question to Mike Somich earlier. I'll ask it to you too. Who do you think is the biggest competitor for them?
You know, as much as I say Purdue, you know, has had so many tournament failures, Edie still presents so many problems. And if their guards are knocking down threes, they're really tough to beat, right? So it might be Purdue. I don't think teams that want to get up and down the court are going to do any good against them, right? I just think they're, once again, a superior team. They ran through all double-digit victories last year as a four seed, kind of a little bit under the radar. No more under the radar now.
Yeah, UConn won every game by 13 or more points. The spread today, 11.5, 12. So we'll see if they can do it again.
I would lay it.
Ugh, I would lay. I said this all week. I would lay it before I would take it.
Rafferty had a great line when they got up like 25 on Northwestern in the first half, and Northwestern called timeout. He said, "Houston, we have a problem."
Yeah, real original. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, Nance is gone. Somebody has to have Dan phrases.
We're gonna hit the break here. Mike Palm sticking around for Palm's pressing three critical big picture questions to ask our guy Michael Lombardi. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DK customers. You can earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager, up to $2,500 in bonus bets your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now. Use our code Lombardi when you sign up. That's how you earn a $500 bonus for every $1,000 you wager right now.
pressing?
Yes, I say it's pressing.
This is Palms Pressing 3.
Now my mother told me never to answer a question with a question.
Sir, my client has answered every question asked by this committee with the utmost sincerity.
Let's get into it. Palms Pressing 3.
Okay, Michael, let's start off with this major. I think this is a major rule change with the kickoff now. And I have several questions about it. I'm still trying to wrap my head around how this affects the game from a betting perspective. I assume that it's going to give better field position because you're between the 40 and the 30 and no more fair catch. From your perspective, did you like this rule change? How do you think it affects scoring in the game? And why didn't they just eliminate the kickoff and you start at the 25?
Well, because I think they wanted to make it an offensive game. And I really believe they think the ball will come out to the 30, 35. It'll make it a lot easier for the offense to move the ball. Everything is done with the idea to hurt the defense. Every rule they put into place. So I don't like it because it takes out that, you know, one of the greatest plays of all time were the onside kick in the Super Bowl that Sean Payton called, right? And so I think when you lose that play, you lose that strategy, and it affects the overall game. How are you going to gain an extra possession on the Chiefs? How will you gain an extra possession on the Bills or Miami or a team that you're really worried about playing that you feel undermanned? That takes away an advantage you might have. So I don't like it from that. I think the idea that it's going to stop violent collisions, I think, is wrong because we know this. We see violent collisions in short spaces with these guys. It's going to be interesting the players they select to play within this group and how they handle it. I think there'll be some deception, but I do think field position will change, and I think that's the ultimate effect of the rule.
Do you think they considered, or what would you think of, with Stormy's leagues, instead of the onside kick, you have a 4th and 12 or whatever, the Pro Bowl, you go 4th and 12 from your own 30 or 35, because this onside kick, you know, this 3% is nonsense if you have no element of surprise, as you say.
Yeah, no, I get that, but I love the element of surprise. But I think, to me, why should a team who's built a 2-score lead have to defend a 4th and 12 to keep that lead? Like, it's got to be something. If you get behind by 2 scores, it should be really hard to come back in the game. It should be you have to do something unique to get yourself back in the game. And the odds, and that's why we have those odds that show up, the win percentage, not that they're accurate, but the win percentage, you know, this is going to be a challenging game for you to win. Everything has to go right. And I don't think you should increase the odds to make everything go right to benefit the team who fell behind.
Final thought on rules here, Michael. I wish they would put the chip in the ball. Why can't they put the chip in the ball and get the spots accurate, the field goals accurate, the punts out of bounds accurate? Why not embrace the technology?
I agree. But, Mike, can I have a Palm Pressing 3 back to you?
I'm like Judge Judy. I don't answer questions. I'm just kidding.
who will call more of the illegal tackling, my man Scott Novak or your favorite official?
I think Scott Novak. Just because he wants to insert himself in the game through his crew, although you make a good argument, because Brad Allen couldn't get the roughing the passer right. I mean, he made some horrific. Remember, like they just tackled Rodgers one time around the waist. He called right. He screwed up the roughing the passer, which is the only thing that official has to do. Your referee has to do is roughing the passer, because they call more holding now from the umpire. Okay.
Hold on. I know you have 2 more questions, but because you brought up the technology, the UFL, they don't have a chip in the ball for the spotting. They'll still do normal official spot, but they do have like this visual technology for the first down to where you don't have to bring chains out there. So there's not going to be a chain gang that brings it out onto the field to measure. They have the visual spatial stuff that says if you got it or not. And up top, if they can tell a spot is wrong, they have the ability to come down and say, hey, you need to move it here.
Is Mike Pereira doing it? Is he going to be
Mike Pereira and... what's the younger guy's name? I can't think of his name right now. But he's also doing it from Fox.
Pereira's horrific on TV, by the way, and good to hang out with at the bar. He's a very entertaining guy.
He is.
Anyhow, I like it because of all this, you know, Michael, these guys coming in, these 65-year-old guys in the zigzag. One guy's got the ball to 37. The other guy on the opposite side is there. I mean, just put it in. Forward progress is where the chip is, right? I mean, anyhow.
Dean Blandino. Exactly.
Dean Blandino, the younger good-looking guy there at the Fox. Anyhow. All right. Michael, let's get on to something that may be more in your wheelhouse. Right there in Philadelphia, in your backyard, Jake Rosenberg has announced he's leaving the Eagles. I didn't know who Jake Rosenberg was, but I've been reading these stories. He's their salary cap executive who specializes in the salary cap. So multiple part question. Does every team have one of these salary cap executives? And how important is it that they are losing Jake Rosenberg?
Well, Jake Rosenberg was best friends with Howie Roseman. That's how he got the job. Howie Roseman was a salary cap analyst before he became the general manager. So Howie trained Jake to do that job. And certainly Jake brought wisdom and brain power to it. He was on Wall Street. He came from a financial background. He was good with numbers. So it plays within it. But at some point, Mike, the cap guy only can work numbers. Somebody has to put a dollar sign on the value of the player, right? Somebody has to say this guy's worth X, this guy's worth Z, this guy's is not worth what they're asking for. That really comes down to a combination of the personnel person and the salary cap guy understanding the market value. You go to your cap guy and say, okay, we think this player's in the top eight at his position based on our grades. What should that salary be equated to? And then the cap guy comes in and says, okay, here's the market. Here's where we think the market could change. Here's where we're going to go. I think Jake wanted to get a GM job. He wasn't even getting any interviews, so he decided to leave. Howie gave him a lovely goodbye, but I think their relationship is still good, but he's a replaceable player within the framework of what they do.
Okay, final question, Michael. Why is the NFL just so much better at marketing their sport than the other big three? Here we sit, Michael, it's noon where you're at, and it's the opening day of baseball. We haven't had a pitch. They couldn't play in the dome stadiums. They try to run it up against the Sweet 16. It's Easter weekend. I mean, it's a disaster. Major League Baseball, this is a day they should own on their own. Can't do it. The NBA can't get their players to play. Fans buy tickets. The stars don't play a third of the game. It's ridiculous. Yet the NFL pivots. They say, we're not going to play on Christmas next year. The ratings are through the roof. We're going to have a doubleheader on Christmas. Hooray for Survivor, right? That makes our even twin. Why is the NFL just so much better?
Well, because I think the NFL is run by the owners. The owners run their league, and they're not afraid to say things that that they need to do to make their league the best it can be. They vote for the what they use the term the good of the league. Whereas in the NBA, they want it to be for the good of the players because the players are the league, which there's no question the players are the league in the NBA. But you got to have a working partnership with the players. You've got to have the ability to get your players to play. Once again, if you pay for a Broadway ticket and you go to the matinee, okay, you might get the stand-in. But if you go to the Saturday night show at 8 o'clock, you expect the star to be there. You can't expect the star to be there. I mean, look, you go pay tonight. Bruce Springsteen's going to pay at the Chase Center in San Francisco. It's sold out, right? Is somebody going to play the lead guitar in that show? No, of course not. He's going to play. You know, he's going to play. You're paying to see him play. I'm paying to go watch players on the 70, but they don't play. And so fans get frustrated and they lose their enthusiasm. And plus, let's face it, football's chess on grass. It combines strategy with violence. And who doesn't love that?
Michael, is that why you get annoyed at, I mean, just the element of the new kickoff that you feel is gimmicky to an extent because the NFL is already so good at so many things? Why are you trying to change for the sake of change?
Why are you messing with it?
Yeah.
Why are you messing with something that's already good? Like, you don't need to change anything. You know, and I thought the owners would not, but the commissioner's all on the player safety thing. You know, look, Malcolm Gladwell 10 years ago said that the NFL stadiums would be like the Roman Coliseum. They would be all empty. It's a fact. He said that, you know, football was going to go away. And the football has gotten nothing but stronger. There were some people, Mark Cuban included, that thought the NBA would take over the NFL. Mark Cuban no longer owns the Mavericks. He sold them. So I think this league is going to stay around a while, and it's so popular. Wait till you see what they pay to get the rights to have that the games on Sunday on Christmas Day. That's going to be incredible, and it's going to the players too. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, your comments about Christmas, the fear for Survivor that you're not going to have games and now you get a doubleheader.
Yeah, you can't just have two games somewhere. You got to make it at least three. Now we can do the two Christmas Day with the Thursday the next day.
Mike, by the way, will be here tomorrow all show as he is every Friday. Michael, enjoy the next couple of days off. If you are watching right now on VSiN, Sharp Money, Patrick Maher and Dustin Swedelson coming up next. If you are on DraftKings Network, Pablo Torre finds out. Have a great day. Enjoy opening day and enjoy the Sweet 16.